Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
And I'm Tamsie Thompson.
For our third episode, we're joined today by Stephen Harding, the founder of Goodfellow Communications. Goodfellow Communications run the press and PR for the London Festival of Architecture. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, nice to be here.
Tamsie, you're responsible for bringing Stephen into the festival. Why did you do it?
It's all my fault. I'm sorry, Stephen. So Stephen was the first call I made on being appointed director of the festival. I knew Stephen from working together many years previously, and I was really aware that the festival hadn't ever, or certainly for a very long time, received the sort of communications that it deserved as the industry's equivalent of London Fashion Week, I suppose. So I called it Stephen and I said, you know, we're going to be a terrible client. We're multi-headed. We've got lots of demanding partners and event organisers. We never know far enough in advance what we're doing because it's done in this kind of satellite approach of all these independent organisations. And I want you to increase our press by hundreds of percent. Do you fancy it? And remarkably, he said yes.
And so I suppose we have to ask the PR professional, you know, for an answer to that. Are we the world's worst client?
You'd never say it.
You just think it.
I think you've come close.
Looking back, I mean, it's a real privilege to work with the festival. And just thinking where we are now in these extraordinary times with the whole COVID-19 situation and the implications that has for festivals and organisations and businesses alike. Back in 2016, when Tamsie made that first call, it was February and we had nothing. We had both she and I had blank pieces of paper on our desks, and we had a festival to organise literally just a few weeks down the train in June. We did it, and LFA 2016 was a really great festival. And I think it just demonstrates that the festival can be nimble, it can be fleet of foot, it can be resilient, and it can be adaptable. And all of those qualities are going to be needed in spades this year, but I'm very confident that once again, Tamsie and her team, with the support of us, can do likewise.
And so, you both met then. You were both working at Rebera.
Yep.
Yes, we were working together in the RBA policy team. Tamsie was running the RBA's internal think tank, Building Futures, and doing some really, really interesting thinking with the wider profession about how it addressed change and future needs. And I was head of public affairs, so I was leading the Institute's political efforts in Westminster, both in Whitehall and in Parliament.
A different government, a different time for policy engagement then.
Yeah, at the time it was when New Labour was really at its height, and it's a really interesting time to be doing public affairs then, and an interesting time to be doing architecture. And we were able to do a great deal. I mean, even now I look back and see work that we did then that endures. For example, the very strong references to design quality in planning legislation and planning guidance were entirely absent until the early 2000s. And it's really thanks to the lobbying that we were able to do at the RIBA with the support of a really interesting cross-party group of parliamentarians that really strong design guidance got written onto the front page of planning legislation for the first time.
And where did you work before Rebera then? What was your route into architecture, public affairs?
I started my professional life actually as a civil servant. I worked at the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, initially doing arts policy, but I soon moved into private office and was private secretary to a series of ministers, three ministers, whose brief included architecture but also included the arts and heritage. And again, that was in the first 97 to 2000 Labour government, and a very fascinating time to be working in Whitehall, and in particular, a very interesting time to be working on architecture policy. This was a time when architecture was beginning to be taken very seriously by government. It was the time of CABE being established and very quickly finding its feet as a power for good across Whitehall. I look back on it now, and I'm very, very proud to have been a part of that.
And then after, so Tamsy obviously left Reba to run the festival. You left, did you leave to set up Goodfellow? Where did you go after Reba?
Slight diversion, funnily, into a West End PR firm, which just didn't suit me at all, just didn't enjoy it. And I think one of the reasons I really didn't enjoy it was because I missed architecture. I found myself in a company that wasn't doing a great deal of architecture. And having by then, actually by accident, worked with and for architects for the entirety of my career, I realized it was something that I was actually deeply interested in, something I wanted to pursue further. And so in June 2009, I took a deep breath and took a bit of a leap of faith and set up Goodfellow Communications, initially all by myself on a dining room table. Yeah. And it's funny, now that we are all working from home and I'm stranded up in Norfolk, I'm speaking to you now from a different dining room table.
I'm really interested, actually, in a lot of, obviously a lot of the architects we speak to on the programme have gone through that same process about deciding they want to start their own firm and, the jump that they make to set up on their own, often leaving a bigger practice. I guess for architects, sometimes it's a design vision that they've got, or sometimes they just want different interactions with clients. For you, it was just wanting more contact with architects.
Yes, it was. It was, the desire to pursue architecture on my own terms, if you like, and to have freedom. I mean, working for yourself can be extraordinarily difficult. I mean, now we're a bigger company, which I would never have foreseen in those very early days. But nevertheless, we still have the freedom to work with the clients that we want to work with. So it makes life very rewarding and very fulfilling.
So as well as us, obviously, a key and important client, you have lots of amazing architects you work with as well.
That's right. Yeah, we're very fortunate in that we've got a really interesting and very wide-ranging portfolio of clients. Everything from large global firms such as KPF to smaller practices, and some really interesting names such as people like Gort Scott, Bell Phillips Architects, Adam Architecture, Hayhurst & Co. So I think one of the real joys that I encounter every day in my working life is that we come across architecture in all shapes and sizes, doing all kinds of interesting things, working across all sectors, which in many ways is like our work with the festival. The festival encounters architecture in all shapes and sizes. In fact, it encounters things beyond the traditional boundaries of the architecture profession.
I would say, yeah, it's absolutely that breadth. And I think that's, for me with the festival, I think that's really positive that we are able to represent that range from, as you say, the kind of KPF, HOK practices to people like Patrick McAvoy, who won a couple of our competitions, the Benches in the City and a Parklet last year. So you've got everyone from really, really young practitioners doing their very first solo projects to massive international firms, and that they all have their place within the LFA, I think is really powerful and speaks to the kind of how diverse the London market is. I think quite uniquely diverse.
That might bring us on to communications then, obviously trying to communicate the work with our architects doing installations and things at one end, but actually some of the work that practices do as architects is really hard, really hard to communicate. Complex design work on Crossrail or on nuclear power stations or on some of the stuff that crosses into engineering or feasibility studies. I guess how can those architects find a way of communicating what they do or sharing what they do?
I think one of the first things I say to any client when they're seeking to talk about a scheme, regardless of its complexity, is to stop thinking like an architect and start thinking like a journalist or start reading like a reader. I mean, look at any broadsheet. Look, for example, at today's Financial Times, and you'll find extraordinarily complex concepts and stories being encapsulated in just a very few words. So with clarity, with interesting storytelling, and with images as well, with good words and pictures, very complex things can be got across relatively easily. Mm. I think where architects maybe go wrong is they think only as architects, and they're used to talking among themselves as a profession in complex terms, which don't necessarily relate to outside audiences. So they do need to step away from themselves a little bit if they want to communicate well.
I think that's again something that your kind of experience in working with practice and with the festival is, there's such a parallel, because it's that question of the audiences. Like, so how you, who you're speaking to and why you're wanting to speak to those people. And we do it a lot when we're working with event organisers on how to shape their event. You know, who do you want to come to this event? And therefore, how do you shape an event? And I think it's, you know, it's exactly the same with the kind of communications press release world. You know, there's one thing which is, you know, a story in a magazine about the kind of the beauty of your building. There's another story about the process that went to get that building. And I think sometimes in both ways, it's perhaps there's a lack of clarity on who they're trying to communicate with.
And then I guess, I don't know whether we've covered it, but you were going to do a PR workshop for us, for our event organisers, before that got pulled in the last week. And we'll do that kind of separately online. But I'm just like interested in common mistakes that architects make. What are the things that they get wrong in terms of communication? Is there, you mentioned about architectural language, but are there other things that you always see them getting wrong?
I think the language thing is fundamental. I can never really stress this enough, how architects really, to succeed in communications, need to assume no prior knowledge whatsoever on the part of their audience. And that's important in terms of how they relate to the festival, because they're hopefully talking to people, many thousands of people, who are going to encounter architecture and be enthused and excited about it for the very first time. And so that communication needs to be crystal clear in terms of engaging and attracting people. But it's got benefits in other ways as well. For example, you know, speaking to other non-architectural audiences, whether that's a client audience or whether it's a planner audience, whether it's somebody else who they may want to be working with, clarity of language is as absolutely critical. And there's no need for architects to use that dense kind of language that we all kind of accidentally fall into from time to time. Never, for example, find me using the word praxis. It's got a place, but I don't think it's got any place in any architectural communication. My other big bugbear is images. Again, images are what sell a project, whether that's to an awards jury or to an editor or a journalist. If the images aren't there to support a project, no matter how wonderful it is, it's going to be hobbled from the very beginning. It's always best to think in terms of images that appeal, again, to the broadest possible audience and explain a project in the broadest, in the easiest possible way. I've come across some images that, again, may be very architectural. I can think of one example where a set of renderings were commissioned to be in the style of Caspar David Friedrich, that early 19th century German romantic painter whose style is typically very gloomy, very bleak, very moody. But when it comes to infusing a member of the public, planner, it's never going to work. So again, just we have to kind of get over ourselves a little bit and think more in terms of the general reader or the general viewer.
So I guess we recommend people use architects to get things done. I guess use a professional to help you write, use a professional to get good photos.
Yes, but I think with a little bit of guidance, anybody can write clearly. I mean, one thing that we always use at the PR workshop is the six W's: who, what, where, when, why, and cheating a little bit, but there's a W in how. And if you get 50 words that the LFA requires for your event description, you won't go far wrong.
Yeah. I guess a lot of businesses at the moment are in a bit of turmoil, thinking about plans and about clients and what the next couple of months are gonna bring for them. I guess I'm just interested to get your thoughts on how, you know, the current situation is going to end and we will, as a profession, emerge from this. Just be interested in your thoughts on how the profession's going to come out of this, what's going to change, you know, how people can be on top of their game when we do emerge from.
Yeah, well, we've had probably 10 good years, haven't we, as an economy since the crash in 2008 and 2009. And I think this current crisis has absolutely shattered entirely any complacency which may have been out there. The security that we may have felt even 2 weeks ago has been smashed to smithereens, and a lot of people are in a lot of distress and very worried, and it's a very anxious time for thousands and thousands of people. Reading the Architects Journal today, the Will Hurst editorial put it really nicely in terms of architects drawing upon their innate strengths. You know, architects are really good at thinking laterally. They're very good. They're trained to solve problems. They're trained to see ways things. And that gives them an innate resilience and adaptability that they will have to draw very deeply upon. You know, let's make no mistake, but they do have those skills. We're having to come to terms very quickly with new ways of working, which may bring positive benefits once this is all over, in terms of that reliance on the face-to-face meeting, or the over-reliance on the face-to-face meeting. People are having to look at how they are going to have to be more productive in the future. But in the meantime, there are still projects to be talking about. People are still talking. They're still planning. There's still plenty of things to do. There's still projects to be talked about. There's a planning system which is still churning away. There's appointments still being made. There is hope. It's going to be difficult, but you know, life is going on, but differently.
And I guess the thing is to just make sure that you're tapping into all the government support that's available for you. In terms of your practice with rents and loans and staff salary schemes.
And I think, just as a positive, I really think, you know, this people spending much more time in their homes now, hopefully thinking about where they live and how they live and where they work and how they work, that's got to reignite, hopefully, in the population, you know, a sense of the importance of design and space and you know, the quality of people's environment, that hopefully when we emerge, that becomes a stronger motivation for people.
It's funny, I was thinking about this morning, because, you know, working from home and using Teams or Zoom or what have you to talk to clients and colleagues, we're all having to think very carefully about, you know, how we're presenting ourselves. You know, there's been a bit of mockery and fun on social media about certain amount of set dressing that's going on in people's home offices, but which shows that when they're forming, architects are very good at thinking carefully about how they're presenting themselves. So I would just urge them to apply that to their communications more generally, and maybe take some lessons from that. But I think one healthy aspect which I'm seeing is that people are taking a little bit of time now to think about those housekeeping things that have maybe taking a bit of a backseat in terms of communication. So, for example, I'm talking to clients about their website. I'm talking to them about SEO. I'm talking to them about how, once this is all over, they can work more effectively in terms of communications, in terms of putting raw materials together, whether that's text or images. So there's people are being forced to think about productivity and streamlining and working more efficiently. And I hope that once this is all over, that will produce some benefits for practices.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for joining us today. I'm Tamsie Thompson.
And I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.